Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary Show. Inspiring stories that change lives. Where ordinary heroes tell their extraordinary stories of how they have triumphed over unexpected challenges. This is where we say what can't be said and use the AAA formula for freedom. Awareness, acceptance, and action. Now, here's your host, Hillary Burns.
Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary Show. And today I am so thrilled to be here with Bryn. So you're going to have to correct me. Lotig?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who is one of the co-founders of Kokori.app, where my daughter works. So anyway, I always say I'm not going to cry and I cry anyway. But so welcome, Bryn. I'm so thrilled to hear your story today and to let everyone know about Kokori. So welcome, welcome, welcome.
Oh, thank you.
So let's see. So to start, you know, what I like people to talk about is, you know, anything that can inspire people, you know, any place in your past life where you were stuck and got unstuck, how you got into Kokori. And then, you know, we'll spend the second part talking about Kokori, if that's all right. So
yeah,
what would you like to tell us?
I mean, well.
Yeah, like when did you start studying? How did you get into it? All that kind of good stuff.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, I guess there's a couple of different standard pitches that I do for my own personal story, but I recently gave a TED Talk, and during my TED Talk, I was pretty vulnerable. And these things, it's not that I've ever shied away from it, but I grew up the oldest child in a substance abuse home. Mm-hmm. And taking ownership of that has been, you know, a bit of a thing, because there's just a lot of shame but pride as well. But those things, I mean, I'm very statistic, overachiever. So there's a long history of both mental illness and substance abuse in my family. And really, I guess the biggest thing is that statistically, I shouldn't be as functional as I am. And so that is something that I'm very proud of. But I think that it also gave me a lot of awareness around these things. And so, you know, I grew up, getting involved in every extracurricular that I could, mostly because it got me out of the house. And by being that both academic and, you know, sport, drama and everything overachiever, it gave me purpose, and it was a distraction. But I went to college. I started flying airplanes when I was 14. I got my private pilot certification before I graduated from high school. And when I went to college, I was this close to going in the Air Force Academy. And I was just really hesitant to sign a 17-year contract when I was 16 years old, or a 16-year contract when I was 17 years old. And so I didn't. And then, you know, like 2-3 weeks into my freshman year of college was 9/11. And 9/11 really sort of kicked off a reshaping of the aviation industry. And it felt like my dream was off the table, and the rug had sort of been pulled out from under me. And like all lost, but privileged white kids can do when they don't have their way, they go on an outward bound trip or a wilderness trip. And it sort of sparked my love of adventure. But in a different way than I think maybe some others, because it fostered that sense of independence that I got while I was flying. You know, in the airplane, I was in control, and on the ground, there was so much that I wasn't in control of. And when I was on my outward bound trip, I was removed from all kinds of things that felt chaotic back at home. And it was just this safe place for me to explore myself And I became sort of addicted to wilderness, backcountry and adventure travel. So much so that I did 3 tours abroad during college. And I found an organization that let me travel with a small cohort of students and our professors. So we backpacked and we moved between different hostels and tent camping sites or sleeping on houseboats, what have you, every 3 days. And I studied on those tours, you know, outdoor pursuits, adventure education, but also cultural and ecotourism. And so finally, at the end of all of my gallivanting around the world, I had been to New Zealand, Australia, Fiji, Thailand, Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, and France. The only degree that I had enough credits to graduate in was recreation and tourism. So I have my undergrad in that, and my minor is in adventure tourism. And, you know, that was a real struggle. So my mom was very frustrated. She felt like I was...
Brynn, when did you start going after your degree?
composite material engineering with an aviation minor.
Wow. Uh-huh. So anyway, it all worked out. But that's
great. My grown-ups didn't think I was living up to my potential.
Your who? Who didn't?
My grown-ups.
Your grown-ups, yeah. Wow. Well, you got a degree. That's amazing that they have a degree in that, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. All right. So go ahead. So there you are. Now you have your degree.
Yep. And so I went... And I got a whole bunch of wilderness medical degrees. So my wilderness first responder, wilderness first aid. So wilderness first responder is like an EMT in a medical or in a wilderness context. So being able to administer epinephrine and different nitroglycerin for heart incidents and, you know, stabilize spine injuries and everything in a backcountry setting. And then I started guiding wilderness trips for a living. So guiding multi-day kayaking trips in the Apostle Islands on Lake Superior and backpacking trips in the Porcupine Mountains, canoeing trips in Sylvania. And I really felt passionate about influencing youth, maybe, that were going through a situation like me at home. Unfortunately, the seasonal lifestyle is not sustainable when you need to provide your own health insurance. And so I started working then in the outdoor industry, specialty outdoor retail, repping for different outdoor stores, similar to what an REI is, only independently owned. So around the Midwest, eventually I started working for a cycling company. And it was then that I met my husband. So Noah and I met at a bar on a Wednesday night. It's in Madison, Wisconsin, called the Essen House. So a German themed restaurant. And this is in the days where eHarmony was pretty big. And I just assumed that at this point in my life, having a college degree, that I wasn't, if I hadn't met somebody like naturally, I wasn't going to.
Wait, how old were you at this point?
26.
26.
And so I didn't think that it was going to happen organically. And right. Yet we met at a bar on a Wednesday, and quickly it felt like we could no longer, he was getting his PhD in Madison and he got a postdoc position in Northern Wisconsin. And we tried the distance thing and I just wasn't having it. So I followed him up north, and once we were really solidly together, I was able to pursue the the seasonal lifestyle again, because I could piggyback on his health insurance. I didn't need that to sustain on my own anymore.
So when you were doing all this, like mm-hmm. the first seasonal part, was mm-hmm. that, were you working for other people or were you doing that yeah. yourself? Okay.
Yep. Always through another outfitter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So then you met, and what were you doing in Madison when you met him? Did you
I was
there?
Working at that cycling company. So
oh, okay. Okay.
I was doing customer service and inside sales. I lived in a little cubicle. I was on the phone all day. It wasn't so much my jam.
Wow. All right. So then you got back to seasonal. Did you get married yep. at that point?
Yep. So we got married about less than a year after we moved up north. And so we were living in this tourist town in northern Wisconsin. And we were closer in age to our coworkers' children than we were to any of our coworkers. This is it's a tourist town and people retire up here. People our age don't stick around. And so somebody suggested that I start looking into the things that this camp was doing up the road a ways. And once I started working at Camp Manitouish, it's a YMCA camp in Boulder Junction, Wisconsin, that's when I learned that there was a pedagogy or sort of a theory and a practice beneath the things that I had experienced during adventure travel. But there was people that had researched it, and there was models around group development and belonging. And there was a thing called the experiential learning cycle that I had experienced over and over again, but I didn't know there was a word for it. I didn't know there was documentation or that it even could be replicated if done correctly.
So pedagogy, what mm-hmm. does that actually mean? Or is that what you just said? Because I never heard that word either. Yeah.
Yeah. So a pedagogy is an underlying principle. So it's okay. talked about a lot within education.
Okay.
But it's the practice of doing something for based on a certain theory. And okay. it is industry best practice. It is replicable. It is proven. And so there is an adventure and experiential education pedagogy that has been developed and in place by professionals for over 150 years.
Wow.
So that really was developed right around World War II. And
so is it like a system
mm-hmm.
or sort of?
It's a theory. It's a theory.
A theory. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. So you discovered it at the Y camp at Manitouish.
Manitouish. Yeah.
Manitouish. Okay.
So if we look it up, pedagogy is the method and practice of teaching, especially an academic subject or a theoretical concept.
Okay. So it didn't have to do with, outdoor adventure or anything. It's mm-hmm. just that. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Got it. Any principle.
Yes. Yeah, it's a method based on a theory and practice. Yep.
Okay, cool. All right. So go ahead. Sorry for the interruption.
It's all right. So I got trained in the leadership program at Camp Manitouish. And the leadership program is sort of one of three pillars of their camp. They absolutely have a residential, overnight sleepaway camp program where you sign up as an individual, maybe with your best friend, and you go and you sleep in a cabin with counselors and some other kids your age, your gender, and you stay there for 2 weeks. And then they have an outpost program, and their outpost program is extended wilderness trips. And so as a camp, they send trips out from 7 days to 45 days. So they do 45-day expeditions, and they are all it's like kayaking the Inside Passage of Alaska. or backpacking in the Brooks Range in the Gates of the Arctic National Park in Alaska. So all above the Arctic Circle, or extended whitewater canoeing in Saskatchewan. And that is a fully scaffolded program where the kids come and they build those wilderness tripping skills year after year after year, so that by the time that they're going on those 45-day trips, they're usually juniors and seniors in high school, and they've been tripping together for quite a few years. But then outside of those two programs, they have the leadership program. And the leadership program is really unique in that it brings intact school groups to this beautiful facility nestled in the Northwoods of Wisconsin. And these are after school clubs, community centers, but also school groups. So there are some schools that will bring their entire sophomore class or their entire senior class, and even one that brings all four freshmen, sophomore, junior, seniors. And then they have an experience at camp that may or may not include that wilderness tripping component. But the leadership program really focuses not just on team building, but it takes it a little bit deeper, and it talks about the qualities of a collaborative leader. And basically the whole program was founded on this premise that we can't rely on leaders to be developed by accident. We need to be very intentional about developing leaders and leadership skills because the world needs them. And so we work on sort of personal development, personal awareness, interaction styles, and then, you know, those collaborative leadership skills, knowing that it takes a really well-balanced team to be successful problem solvers. And so putting them through a series of activities or problem-solving initiatives, you could even call them like certain simulations, to overcome challenges. And then that often then culminates on the high ropes course. So cables and telephone poles, 30, 40 feet in the air.
So this is entire schools?
Yep.
Like how many kids at once could do something like this?
I mean, depending on a rotation and what we have for staffing, I mean, I think Prairie School is like 230 students.
Wow. Cause I know my class in high school was like 600. So I'm thinking,
yeah,
the whole school would have been 2,400 kids.
Yeah.
Schlepping to Wisconsin from Connecticut. Yeah, no. I mean, is it mostly local kids who come or no? Mm-hmm.
No, we wow. draw from Milwaukee and Chicago and Madison. So all are 4 to 6 hours away.
Wow.
Some local programs for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're in Connecticut, I could give you plenty of recommendations of programs that are closer to you.
Yeah. I was just trying to figure out like how could you possibly do that with such a big group, but that's still a big group, 230, yeah.
Yeah.
And how long are they there for?
It depends. It depends on the program. I mean, we can program anywhere from a few hours to a few days. I think our longest program in the leadership department is 10 days.
Wow.
It's 5 days in camp, and then 5 days on trail. So a 5-day canoe trip.
So they really learn leadership during those. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's great. What a great thing. All right. I'll stop interrupting. Go ahead.
No, it's fine. The whole thing's supposed to be a discussion, right?
I know. Well, I'm so interested. It's like, keep going. Then what happened?
So when
did you meet your husband, and when did you start at the camp, at the Y camp? How long have you been doing that?
So Noah and I met in 2008.
Okay.
We in like June of 2008, we moved to the Northwoods in December of 2009, and I started working at camp early in the spring of 2010.
Okay.
So then we got married in 2010. I was still guiding trips the summer of 2010. I think I spent something like 30 nights on trail that summer. Wow. And so then we had our first child in November of 2011. Wow. And that put an end to some of my wilderness trips. Right. So I did multiple kayaking trips while I was pregnant. And then when I was pregnant with my second child, we did a longer backpacking trip. So I say that I got them hooked before they were even born. But once I had
the baby, you took the baby on the backpacking trip?
Well, I was pregnant with him. He was a lot easier to take care of on the inside.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So I think we started taking them on trips when they were 1 and 3.
Okay. So do you have two kids still?
Yep.
You still have two? Okay. Yep. How old are they? So, I could figure that out. How old are they now?
Okay. They're going to be, 11? They're going to be 11 and 9 in a week and a half. So they are 2 years and 4 days apart. Each of them was born on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, the year they were born.
And boys or girls?
Two boys.
Wow. And my brothers are, yours are November? Mm-hmm. No, yes. My brothers are November 7th and 14th, 2 years apart. So.
Oh, sure.
Interesting. Yeah. They always fought. Do your boys fight?
No. I mean, sure, a little bit, but they actually... My younger just is so in love with his big brother.
Wow.
I'm very, very fortunate. I do watch other friends with sibling sets, and we're very lucky that ours like each other as much as they do.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah. Okay. So once you had the kids, and then what?
Then my husband said I couldn't sleep. I couldn't leave home for weeks at a time, and that he needed me to stay home. So... So I was still doing other jobs, but when I was ready to like sort of re-enter the workforce, I was saying to my supervisor, I was like, you know, I'd like to maybe attend some more professional conferences and stuff. And he was like, did you ever think about getting a master's? And I was like, no, maybe when the kids go back, when they're in school full time. And so at the time they were 2 and 4 years old, and he was like, well, why don't you just call this professor? And so I called her, and she was like, if you want to do it, you have to do it now because I'm going to retire and this is my last cohort. And I was like, well, I'm not ready. I'm not ready to do it now. But what other program would you recommend for 2 years from now? And she goes, none of them are as good as mine. And I was like, oh my gosh.
And what was the program for again?
So it's a master's in education. Okay. Adventure-based experiential education.
Wow. And what school was that at?
The University of Wisconsin La Crosse.
La Crosse, okay.
So my husband was like, you should do it. And I was like, are you sure? And he was like, yeah, I think you should. And I was like, I don't think it's going to be easy. And he's like, that's okay. We'll do it. He goes, the timing might not be perfect, but that doesn't mean the timing is wrong. And he, of course, has his PhD, so he thinks that advanced degrees are great. And
go ahead.
My brother and sister-in-laws, there's three boys in my husband's family, and then they've all married girls. And at the time, I was the only one without a master's degree. and so I was like, all right, yeah, I would like an advanced graduate degree.
So what was his PhD in?
He's a limnologist.
Which means?
Yep. So limnos is the Greek word for fresh water. So he studies freshwater lakes and streams. Essentially, if you think about oceanography, it's an oceanography degree for water.
For fresh water Wow. Oh, cool. Okay. All right. So you got your master's? How long did it take?
Yep. So it took a year and a half. During that program, it included a 2-week backpacking trip. And I mean, honestly, that's the whole reason that I signed up. And it was funny because talking with this professor, they tried to tell me the importance of building community and all of the benefits of the backpacking trip. And I was like, actually, the only reason I'm signing up for a master's is to go backpacking for 2 weeks, because my husband would never let me go unless I got a master's out of it. So I went to get my master's, and that's where I met my business partner. So she was in the same master's program as me.
So where was that? That was Wisconsin?
Yep. So she was living in Chicago at the time, and I was in northern Wisconsin, and we met down in southern Wisconsin one weekend a month. A lot of asynchronous work over the internet, and then a 2-week backpacking trip in Wyoming where her and I shared a tent, and she wouldn't stop talking about her idea for our business. And graduation weekend, I was like, hey, it's a really good idea. If you want help, let me know. And she was like, I do want help. And so we've been 50-50 ever since.
Wow. All right. Well, Doug, can we go to the commercial now and keep them in suspense? Because I want to hear what happened after that, but I don't want to get too into it and then have to stop.
Are you inspired? Are you living a life story you are proud to tell? Are you actively pursuing and creating the life of your dreams? Well, if not, you really need Hillary's AAA program for freedom. Just visit gettingrealwithhillary.com and schedule a time with Hillary today.
Your student sense of community is so much more than a classroom. Use back-to-school activities that combine ice melters with relationship building. Search by team building categories to meet your students where they are. Find your favorite educators and follow them with your students. As you open your day with a morning meeting or advisory session, filter for an opener that helps your students build trust. Are you in between lessons? Why not lead a brain break that energizes your students while helping them practice self-control? Is it the end of the day already? Why not lead a closing circle with the materials that you have on hand?
All right, now we get to hear the rest of the story. So, so I'm assuming you met Kendra, and that's your business partner, right?
Yep.
So just, I mean, not random, but sort of random, right? Mm-hmm. You're both in the master's. You probably weren't going to get it, and then you did, and there she was. Okay, so what happened after that?
Well, so after that, we were just talking about the business platform, and I also started working for a school here in northern Wisconsin. I was the adventure program coordinator for a public school working with pre-K through eighth grade students, taking them on adventures outside of the classroom 3 times a year or once every trimester. And so we would, again, it was like a fully scaffolded program where my pre-K and kinder kids, we'd go for a hike through the woods and we'd happen upon a tent that I had set up, and we'd climb inside the tent and we'd pretend to sleep and we'd snore really loud, and then we'd read a story, and then we'd go play games, and then we'd hike back to the classroom and just have a little short adventure. And by the time they were in seventh and eighth grade, we were doing multiple day overnights and retreats. So yeah.
And that was part of the regular school curriculum?
Yep. So the school is a expeditionary learning school.
Okay.
And so it's a EL Education is a national organization that accredits public schools. But they are based on a lot of philosophies from Kurt Hahn and John Dewey. And Kurt Hahn was the founder of Outward Bound. And so a lot of that pedagogy was really near and dear to my heart.
So EL is experiential learning, I'm assuming.
Yep, expeditionary learning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, expeditionary.
Okay. Expeditionary okay. learning, experiential education, it's pretty interchangeable.
And when did that kind of thing start? Like forever? Has it been around forever?
Well, EL education sort of branched off from Outward Bound. Outward Bound started just after World War II.
Okay. Wow. So it wasn't, you weren't like in a regular public school. It was a special.
It is a public school. It's a public school. Mm-hmm.
But do you think that's like you were out in Wisconsin? I mean, I have never heard of that here, like in the Northeast. I'm sure that they might have them, but I've just never heard of it. Mm-hmm. Is it very common or was it very specialized?
What
do you think?
Not everybody does it, but I mean, the traditional school was developed to get factory workers acclimated to systematized factory work. It has never been about what is best for children.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, there's all kinds of private schools and charter schools, and those that can afford it have always sort of pushed back against the traditional education system and looked into project-based learning and student-led learning and a lot of other things. But what Kendra and I are trying to do is that the people who need it most are the ones who can least afford it.
Mm. All right. So talk about, because I know what you guys do, but can you talk about how that happened? And because, you know, what you're saying is fascinating. And I don't know, maybe more people know more about it. But to me, it's new. I know what, Haley, you know, my daughter has said about it. But So act like we don't know anything. And then say what you guys are doing, because it's really, really cool. Okay.
So, I mean, well, kids can't learn if they don't feel safe and connected. And there's supporting neuroscience that talks about how you need to regulate your body before you can access some of those higher level reasoning features of your brain. Mm-hmm. That the brain is sort of this one-way street, and you know, thinking about like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and even like a toddler or a grown-up, like if you are too hungry or too tired or too hot, you get fussy
or too afraid.
Yeah. And so you have to regulate some of those core networks. And once you're regulated, then we talk about connection before content, is that it's really hard to learn some of this advanced level, higher reasoning stuff if you don't feel that you are relating to the people around you or the people who are delivering this information. And so what social and emotional learning is teaching you how to regulate your body, how to relate to others before then you do those higher level problem solving. And so Kendra and I both came to the field of experiential education from different means, me from wilderness tripping and a challenge course. And at this challenge course, or even when I was working as the program coordinator, the adventure program coordinator for this school, I mean, I would work with these students on a very limited basis and we would have a fantastic time. But then the teachers are like, okay, that's over. And I was like, it doesn't have to be over. Like, I'm giving you this foundation. I'm modeling these things that then if you use that, you can talk about how when we got lost in the woods snowshoeing and that was hard and you wanted to give up is the same as a math test feeling hard and wanting to give up. But what is it like to persevere and to grapple with things that are hard and still push through that. Or when you're working on a book report, how is that like when we were canoeing and you guys had to communicate in order to get your boat to go straight? You know, who's the leader? Who's the follower? How do you communicate in order to achieve a similar goal? And to build off of those wilderness or adventure outdoor experiences just make us that much stronger in the classroom. And so I was doing that, and Kendra was a social worker in the Chicago schools, and people would come to her and say, hey, my kids are really struggling to connect with each other. And she would give them an activity, or, hey, they're really struggling because they don't trust one another. They don't know how to do problem solving. They want the answer. They aren't good at nonlinear thinking. They don't know how to make mistakes. And they don't know how to reconcile if they've made a mistake. They give up and they back out. And so we have activities where you can practice making mistakes and you learn that it's okay. And social emotional learning is a new buzzword within education that just talks about what are the social skills and the emotional regulation skills that students should have. And there's a collaborative for academic and social emotional learning that has sort of some learning targets. And those teaching standards are now mandated in 29 different states. And the reason that they're mandated is because there is economic benefit. They talk about how for every $1 spent on social emotional learning programs, they get $11 in return. And, you know, there's increased health benefits for students, and they're more likely to pursue through not just to high school graduation, but to get a college degree and then to obtain a satisfying job as an early adult if they have good emotional intelligence, good social skills. And these social and emotional learning skills are the things that employers are looking for and say are lacking in the up and coming generations these days.
So how, just if they invest a dollar, how do they get the $11 back? Just over time?
In reduced crime, in reduced overall health disorders, all kinds of just large, big picture social benefits.
Wow.
Adjudication.
So when you said the 29 states, so how did that, like, it seems like, you know, going from the factory worker mentality and then introducing this would be such a radical change. Like, how did that happen? Like, who, I mean, to me it makes sense, but I know sometimes we have resistance.
How did it come into such a mainstream? Gradual. So like if you think about the early 2000s, late 90s, schools were pushing core subjects. So that was when they were cutting math or cutting music and PE, and everything was focused on science, math, reading, English. Writing. That is the rise of standardized testing. And everything was standardized, no child left behind, if you think about. And then it was, how do we measure student success and how do we determine, you know, teacher effectiveness? And it was like, what we can measure is the only thing that matters. And a lot of those social and emotional skills were left by the wayside. Just because there's enormous pressure on teachers, because their performance was being evaluated based on their students' outcome on those standardized tests. And the pendulum is just starting to swing back the other way. Certainly, you know, in our COVID, our post-COVID understanding of things, and post-COVID, not that we're out of COVID, just that, you know, pre-COVID, after COVID awareness of the state of the world And, you know, we talk about learning loss, but there's also a social component and a mental health component, and this connectedness that has been missing. And, you know, I remember, if you think early 2010s and stuff, when technology became more affordable and available, one-to-one technology was a huge thing in education. Oh, we have one-to-one Chromebooks. We have one-to-one this. And back when I was a kid, we used to go to the computer lab, and computer skills was something that we did for 1 hour every week. And now there's no such thing as like a computer lab, but there's no computer skills class. Mm-hmm. Computers are infused, and technology is infused in everything that students are doing. And that's how Kendra and I view social and emotional learning skills. Right now, mm-hmm. schools are doing SEL for, you know, a block of time, and it is in a, it's like, okay, stop what you're doing. We're going to do SEL skills. And then it's over. Mm-hmm. Instead of it being, hey, we're going to learn math in a way that also develops our social emotional learning skills. Hey, we're going to do social studies and reading and writing in a way that also develops those social and emotional learning skills. And so our goal is to have SEL infused like fluoride in the water. And it to be something that people don't even think about, because you're not going down the hall to do computer skills for 1 hour a day. You're not blocking off this time in your calendar to be like, okay, we're gonna learn how to be a good friend today. And
for an hour.
Yeah.
And then you can go back to not being a good friend afterwards.
Exactly.
So, okay. So I get it. Like, I get the message, I'm in, but how, are schools realizing that what they were doing was they were missing this, and that there's a problem, and they're now on board? Like, are
So there's studies and research that say they all agree, like 92% of teachers and principals agree that it is needed, but only 29% of them have a plan.
Okay.
And if you think about it, I mean, I do it, I'm sure you do it, but when we're stressed out, we revert back to what's easy and simple. Mm-hmm. And right now, teachers are so overwhelmed with the amount of responsibility and things that they have to do that they teach the way they were taught, and they go back to what is reflexive. And sometimes teaching those social emotional learning skills is really hard for them to fit into their day. Mm-hmm. And so what schools are doing is they are creating this time for morning meeting or advisory to work on those skills. And so what our platform does, what Kikori is it's a digital platform of over 1,000 activities that are aligned with CASEL's social emotional learning skills, 21st century skills, and UNESCO's sustainable development goals. And those activities are available for teachers as a tool. Yes, it is technology, but it's a tool for teachers, and it's not for students to interact with. Our goal is to train the teachers how to facilitate activities that focus on either one skill at a time in increasing a sort of complexity. And if you think about basketball, you know, every year kids have a basketball unit in gym, and it doesn't matter as they're getting older that they still do it. And so they don't say, oh yeah, we did basketball in kindergarten, we don't need to do that in third grade.
Right.
But they learn one skill at a time, and they drill those individual skills so that they can work up to running plays, so that they can then do a scrimmage, all so they can be successful in a game. And Kendra and I believe that social emotional skills are the same, that we need to drill them. You know, we need to drill communication. We need to drill trust. We need to drill problem solving. So that as an individual skill worked up into a combination of skills or like a play, then in a scrimmage where it's a safe environment for kids to practice these skills with a grown-up who could step in and redirect as needed before we're sending them out into this real world game where we're expecting them to default back to a certain learning style. And so our platform has over 1,000 activities and you can search and filter based on what you need. If you have 5 minutes, then you can find 5 minute activities. If you have 30 minutes, we can find 30 minute activities based on the age of your participants or how much energy. If it's a sitting activity, sitting or standing, walking, running, if you want to do something outdoors, if you want to do something with a virtual group, we go corporate all the way down to pre-K. And we can work on building empathy. We can work on perspective taking. We can work on conflict resolution. And so anything that you and your students, your participants, your clients might need, you can search and filter for that and find the exact activity for you. The other thing that's really unique about our platform is that we're crowdsourced. And so we have a variety of perspectives. And the thing that we have learned about teachers is that they are innovative and they are resourceful. And sometimes they just need a little bit of a spark of an idea and they can take it and run with it. Mm. And so we meet the educator where they're at. If you need step-by-step instructions, every single activity, regardless of who has submitted it, has instructions for preparation, step-by-step instructions to play, and then reflection questions that follow the experiential learning cycle to reflect, connect to other areas of your life, and then grow in an intentional direction. There's a lot of SEL content out there that offers like discussion prompts, but they don't always close that experiential learning cycle, which has been proven to deepen learning.
And where did these activities, I mean, I think I know, but I want people to know where the activities came from, the 1,000 activities.
Yeah. So they are submitted by luminaries or industry leaders, as well as anybody like me and you. So we do a back and forth vetting process on activities just to make sure that intellectual property and safety are adhered to. But like I said, everybody has something worth contributing. And sometimes the perspectives are just a little bit different. And so we have a place for all of it. And there's some other databases of activities out there, but they're usually just from one person's perspective. Mm. And so our platform brings together, you know, K-2 classroom educators, as well as licensed social workers and therapists, as well as people with PhDs on corporate creativity, or Phi-Ed teachers, camp counselors, you know, social justice leaders that are tackling really big things when it comes to gun and knife violence or the LGBTQIA sort of sphere of thought and what it means for identity and interacting with others. Perspectives are in one place.
So if I was, I don't know, like a teacher.
Yeah.
And I was having, some kids were having a problem and I had your app. I can just go conflict resolution, boom, here's the activity and we could try it. Like it could be that simple. Wow. Mm-hmm. So how, so let's say somebody was interested in finding out more about Kikori. Yeah. What would they do? How would they find you? I mean, tell us about it. And you know, we can put links and everything in the notes. So how would, like, I'm interested. What do I do now?
Well, So we are available both for desktop and mobile devices.
Okay.
And you can find the app either on the web or in the app stores under Kikori app. It's spelled K-I-K-O-R-I-A-P-P. And our website is kikoriapp.com. And it'll prompt you to download either the desktop version or send you to the app store so you can get a mobile version. We have a free membership or a paid individual membership. And what you're paying for are just some of those premium technology features. I think that if we could afford to give it away to everybody, we would. We just can't. And then we also have group and organizational membership. And what's really unique about those memberships is that you get a private administrative dashboard. So you can turn licenses on or off. If somebody from your school or organization walks away mid-year, they're not walking away with your investment. It gives you a closed sharing network so you can share content just between the people on your dashboard and not have to share it with the greater Kikori community, protecting maybe some privacy or intellectual property. And then that gives you data usage reports and you can take and share notes on activities. It also comes with professional services where we identify what it is that will help you be successful and just customize a professional development and onboarding launch plan for you and your staff to make sure that you are all successful. There's a lot of solutions out there that are like, sure, we'll take your money. And then they don't really work together with you to make sure that everybody is using it as effectively and efficiently as possible. And that's really our goal.
So if they wanted to get a demo or connect with you to find out more, they would go to kikoriapp.com. Is there a button there they can press to?
Yeah. So you can sign up for a demo. You can fill out a type form that talks about like who might be interested, how many licenses you want to outfit your program with. And there's signups and pop-ups all on the website. So
awesome.
We have a place for anybody and everybody.
And this can be used in corporate too, as well as schools. Like anybody who wants to get some great activities to connect. And I'm looking for the words, problem solve, all that.
Yeah, so last night I led a training for my local volunteer fire department. And it was perfect. Any HR department could use it. Secondary education, so student life, res life. We have accounts, but Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Boys and Girls Clubs, after school programs, sports teams, and anybody that is looking for an experiential way to get people to connect to themselves, to one another, or the planet.
Wow. Now, so even like, you know, in the corporate world, we do team building. That would be great for that, right? I mean, stuff like that. Okay. Wow. Well, this is really awesome.
I've worked with banks, with children's museum staff, the fire department. We worked with C-suite individuals, school superintendents and principals. So not just those classroom teachers, but anybody who's trying to function better together as a team.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much. This has been wonderful. I have to say that the design, my daughter's responsible for that, right? Is that, that's not a lie, is it? Yeah. And it's adorable.
It's not a lie.
It's adorable. The colors are great. It's, you know, it just makes you happy to look at it. So thank you so much. I think we have 1 minute. And what would you like to leave people with, Bryn? Like, what would be your message to people?
That play is so important, but play cannot change the world. You have to reflect. You have to connect it to other areas of your life if you want to grow in the direction that you have control over. And so just, yeah, play, reflect, connect, grow.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I can't wait for everyone to check it out. And thanks for being here. Thanks for your generosity, your vulnerability, your brilliance, and your love, you know, for people and what you want the world to be like. Thank you.
Oh, well, it was a pleasure to get real with you today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Real with Hillary show. We hope you are entertained and inspired. Please subscribe to Hillary's newsletter. Go to gettingrealwithhillary.com for more freedom techniques and fantastic stories and links to other great stuff. And don't forget to tune in every week on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio TV. And let's get real. Let's get connected. Let's get inspired and create that life you love.